It's story time. In the Zen tradition, we often pass on the teaching with stories, family stories of our ancestors. The teaching in India was often passed on as kind of abstract ideas. But when it got to China and Japan in the Zen school, the same abstract ideas that are so important got in, put in the form of these very concrete stories. They're so concrete, sometimes it's hard to tell what the abstract principle behind them is. But that fresh directness is the style of Zen. So you might say these are just, they're old dusty stories, but I feel like there's something important about passing on these stories. If we as Zen practitioners don't do it, then they'll be lost forever. So the old dusty stories, they point to our life in the present too. That's their value. So going through the Book of Serenity, on collection of Zen stories, we've reached case 13. And this is a story about transmission from a teacher to student. Transmission of a lineage. So we have this, one of our old stories is another Zen story about the Buddha and his disciple Mahakashyapa. One time on Vulture Peak in India, the Buddha held up a flower, you may have heard, twirled it before the assembly, and everyone was silent. But Mahakashyapa, one of the Buddha's disciples, the edges of his lips curled up just a little bit. No one even noticed except the Buddha. A slight smile, maybe just relaxation upon seeing the twirling of a flower. And at this point, the Buddha said, I have the treasury of the true Dharma eye, the subtle mind of Nirvana, the true form of no form, the flawless Dharma gate. It's not established upon words and phrases. It's a special transmission outside tradition. I now entrust this to Mahakashyapa. And that's the first Zen transmission. Transmission of what? Of the true Dharma eye treasury. The subtle mind of Nirvana. So subtle that it's beyond words and phrases. So subtle that if we say this is Nirvana and that's not Nirvana, then it gets kind of gross. can't say it's some particular thing. We can't even say it's nothing. But it is happening in a meeting with a flower and two people on a mountaintop. And could it be that the lineage, we often think of a lineage as like a long list of teachers, of people passing something on to each other. Maybe the lineage is not really actually people or something that's being passed along, but just relationship itself. It's a lineage of relationship or meeting in the present moment. And a meeting in mutual understanding or acknowledgement of something larger than ourselves. Maybe larger is not quite right because we're not talking about any particular size. Something beyond who we think we are, beyond even what we think the meeting is. This is a Robert Aitken Roshi's commentary on this preliminary story about Buddha holding up the flower. He says, what is transmission after all? Certainly it's not a heavenly decree. Even excellent teachers have made mistakes and named disgraceful successors. If transmission is set forth as some kind of occult sanctification, then the Buddhas and all his disciples and the rest of us are betrayed. It's all a hoax. As Wu Men says, the world-honored one would be no better than a swindler at the town gate hawking tin jewelry dipped in gold paint. Do we have tin jewelry dipped in gold paint? The point is that transmission is not identifiable by any set of fixed criteria. The Buddha himself cannot be distinguished by any particular features or qualities. We have those types of teachings, like in the Diamond Sutra. Nonetheless, something happened there on Vulture Peak, and that something continues to happen in upright Zen programs everywhere. Yasutani Roshi, one of his teachers, criticized with the most penetrating language the Buddhist teachers who declare that realization is something that our ancestors might have attained but is beyond our reach today. I am confident that he would have berated those who deny transmission as well. In any case, the realization experience is itself a kind of transmission. Deeply understanding that we don't understand. Buddhas are those who have great realization of delusion. The story of Buddha twirling a flower is an archetype for the unity of these two kinds of transmission. First, the message of the flower, and second, the acknowledgement of the Buddha. The flower is one of the myriad things that come forth and confirm the self. This is what Dogen says, is that a myriad things come forth and confirm the self. This is realization. To carry the self forward and confirm myriad things is delusion. So when a flower comes forth, when Mahakashyapa's eyes are not reaching out from his skull to touch the flower, when he's not even expecting a flower at all, a flower appears and confirms Mahakashyapa. Confirmation by a sense experience of the world, confirmation by the master, and finally confirmation by the Buddha's Sangha. These are the three transmissions. All three are transformational experiences, and no one can teach unless each of them is in place. I thought that was quite beautiful and original. Three kinds of transmission. One is the actual experience of the myriad things coming forth and confirming us. In other words, the self's not coming forward. There's a dropping away, and then everything is us. Many ways to talk about this and not talk about this. So that there's a transmission of this. And then there's a confirmation by the teacher. And then there's a confirmation by the Sangha. He doesn't explain this, but part of this could be that that there's harmony in the Sangha. One could have possibly a great realization, and a teacher could confirm that, but then someone just actually can't get along with anyone. For example, maybe that could be one example of the confirmation by the Sangha. I think there were a lot of great Zen teachers in the past, actually, who couldn't get along with anyone. So maybe that's not quite it. But we maybe say that they're not getting along with everyone was their way of teaching something about harmony. Something like that. So, Suzuki Roshi. Says, so everything is supported by Dharma, and Dharma is supporting everything. So Dharma is everything, and everything is Dharma. That's our conviction, our faith. And actually, it is so. Everything is supporting Dharma, and Dharma is supporting everything. A little bit like the myriad things are continuously coming forth and confirming us and everything else. And us and everything else are mutually and inconceivably coming forth and confirming the world. Maybe unusual way of thinking about things, but actually quite ordinary. This is what's happening right now. That's our conviction, our faith, and it's actually so. That is why we transmit our light to others. You may say, well, if everyone has his own lamp already, there will be no need to transmit a lamp to others. But even though you have it, if you don't feel you have it, it doesn't make sense. How you have the feeling of having a Dharma lamp within yourself is through your teacher. You already have it, but if you feel you don't have it, but you can feel that you have it within yourself through your teacher. So transmission of Dharma means find your own lamp through your teacher. That's transmission. It's a little like, I think there's some subtlety here too. Because a teacher could make someone just kind of, by being very nice to someone, could make someone feel good about themselves. So that seems too simple, right? Suzuki Roshi goes on. You may say that it's difficult for you to understand this idea of transmission. Why it's difficult is, when you say transmission, you think as if you have something to transmit. It's some traditional way of observing things, or traditional understanding of Buddhism or something. You understand in that way, so there must be something to transmit. And then you say, but I don't want that kind of old tradition. That will be what you may say. Because when you say transmission, you think there's something to transmit, and your teacher is someone who transmits something to you. So if you receive transmission, you should obey completely your teacher. You should do things exactly as your teacher did. You will have that kind of idea. So that's why it's difficult to accept transmission. But you know, between teacher and disciple, if disciple receives transmission, then he or she is a teacher. Even though two of us, different persons, both with different characters, with different ways, each can express Buddha's way. And when you express the Buddha way in your own way, then your way includes everything, including your teacher. So to have a vivid and refreshed way of expression of our true way is most important. So the disciple's way cannot be exactly like the teacher's way, but there must be some similarity. Even though they're similar, actually what they will do is quite different. Usually they speak the same language. I don't mean Japanese or English language. By language, I mean, no! And it says, thumps something 3 times. That kind of language. We should be able to understand each other in that way. So though great realization of delusion can be transmitted and confirmed, one sometimes forgets that delusion is delusion. I think it's okay. It must be okay. Otherwise, we have a problem. And therefore, we just continue. We have to just continue. Yeah. So there's something about devotion. It doesn't necessarily mean that we are Buddha. It means we understand the direction. We understand the way the path leads, the Buddha path, and we are devoted to walking on it endlessly. Total devotion to truth, integrity, honesty, uprightness, presence, and fresh openness. And we forget and fall down and we get up again. I think Dogen says something like, fall down 99 times, get up 100, or something like that. So, the getting up 100, it is, you could say, is partly what's transmitted. Falling down happens naturally. Something about devotion. So we have a practice period coming this fall. Time to, just a limited time period to kind of arouse the spirit of devotion for practice. We can't say that certain things are practice and certain things aren't, really. And yet, we have these, we offer these practices to, of practice period to devote oneself to. And we begin with the Sesshin, this meditation retreat, study retreat, studying these transmission stories of these ancestors. Something, because all the stories are different, we just gradually get some sense of like, what is this nameless relationship that takes all these different manifestations. So here's today's story. That was a long preamble to case 13 of the Book of Serenity. Linji's blind ass. Linji, or in Japanese Rinzai, is the founder of the Rinzai School of Zen. Kind of a, he was a dramatic, kind of forceful character, so that's the flavor of the Rinzai tradition, even in modern America. Fast-paced, dramatic. If somebody moves on the other side of the zendo, there's a certain person whose role it is to yell across the zendo, "Don't move!" We don't do that here. It's not our style. Soto Zen, which we practice here, is I could say more gentle, more spacious. Although sometimes we get quite strict. The introduction to the story is, devoted entirely to helping others, you don't know there is a self. You could say, completely absorbed in helping others, you forget yourself. You should exert the Dharma to the fullest, to the utmost, without concern that there be no people. So, could mean that, you know, if you're giving a Dharma talk and there's only one person there, you should just like fully give the Dharma talk. It doesn't matter, right? If anybody shows up to anything. Or it could mean, without concern that there be no people. In other words, there actually really aren't people. There's just arising and ceasing conditions, bodies and minds coming together and parting. And we, for shorthand, we call that people. So you should be entirely devoted to helping people without concern that there are no people. That would be one way to hear this. For this, it is necessary to have the ruthless ability to snap a wooden pillar in two. Ruthless means like without hesitation. Have the spontaneous ability to just respond and cut through delusion, like Manjushri's sword. When about to leave this world, What then? That's the introduction. Here's the story. When Lin Ji, the great shouting Zen ancestor, often would shout in response to almost any question, because he didn't want to confuse people with verbose explanations. When Lin Ji was about to die, he admonished his disciple San Sheng, saying, "After I pass on, after I cease on this earth, please don't destroy my treasury of the true Dharma eye. Or after I pass on and die, please don't let my treasury of the true Dharma eye cease. When I cease, please don't let this true Dharma eye treasury cease." It's actually the same character used there. So, referring to that story of that the Buddha said to Mahakashyapa, "I have the treasury of the true Dharma eye, the subtle mind of Nirvana, I now entrust to you." So Lin Ji's kind of reenacting the scene a little bit with his student and about to die, saying, when I cease to be here, please don't let my treasury of the true Dharma eye cease. San Sheng, his disciple, said, "How dare I let the teacher's treasury of the true Dharma eye cease?" Lin Ji said, "Well, if someone suddenly questions you about it, how will you reply?" San Sheng said, "Ha!" Lin Ji said, "Who would have known that my treasury of the true Dharma eye would perish in this blind ass?" That's the story. So, is he disappointed or is he elated? The Zen people have these funny ways of talking. So, this is my teacher's comments on this story. He says, this blind ass is referring to San Sheng. Lin Ji is not humble. Zen teachers resort to insults when they cannot find a way to compliment their students enough. That's the usual way of understanding this story. Dharma transmission is when the teacher's dharma dies in the student. In other words, they want it to die in the student, and then they can die. That's why teachers like to disown their students after it happens. When you, the student, turn around and bite the teacher's arm off, they don't like it. Please don't destroy my treasury of the true Dharma eye. How dare I destroy it? Well, if someone suddenly questions you about it, how will you reply? Well, first of all, there's the 12 links of dependent co-origination, beginning with ignorance. Dependent on ignorance, karmic formations arise. And, you know, all throughout, and then, you know, with the ceasing of all those, ignorance ceases. Linji maybe would have walked out of the room or something. Because he wasn't into these kind of like long explanations. Sometimes long explanations are helpful, so we have classes where we offer them. And sometimes there's not time for that. There's a teacher's about to die. So you just need the basic immediate response. What is the treasury of the true Dharma eye? The commentary says, and then later on, it says, in reality, this thing does not increase. This thing may be referring to the true Dharma eye treasury. This thing does not increase even though 1,000 Buddhas appear in the world, nor does it decrease when 1,000 sages pass away. How could this one San Sheng be able to cause it to prosper or die out? In other words, isn't this kind of a silly story in the first place to say, when I cease, please don't let my precious treasury of the true Dharma I cease. Take care of this thing because it's very fragile and can be lost. This is saying, well, even if 1,000 Buddhas appear, it's not going to get any bigger and better. And if all the awakened ones disappear, it's not going to disappear. So what do you mean, take care of this thing that can't increase or decrease? How could it prosper or die out? In the verse, it talks about the true imperative. So my teacher says, what's the true imperative? Do you understand how to be a bodhisattva? What more can we derive from this story to help people, to help our daily life? Why doesn't the story just tell us to be mindful? Wouldn't that have been more encouraging? They're doing it their way. They've been saying, be mindful for years. This story is when they're playing. This is when the teacher's about to die. They're not giving beginner's zazen instruction anymore. This is your last chance. And there's a big shout right here in my chest, right here in my heart. It's like a flower that's not opened, but any minute this flower can open. And I'm going to put it into a vase just before it's ready to open. This is a big, huge shout of be mindful of dependent co-arising. Be mindful of dependent co-arising. That instruction sometimes comes in the form of a shout. The shout is a gift. It's the gift that shows that you care enough to send the very best. I really think we all have got that shout in our heart, a shout to our friends, a shout to ourself. When your friend shouts to you that way, you love your friend so much that all you can do is say something like, you blind ass. Because no compliment could possibly reach it. So you have to go around and insult them, at least in the Tang Dynasty. Maybe nowadays we can say, gee, that was really good. So, in this Soto Zen collection of koans, there's quite a few stories about Linji and his shouts, because we include all these Zen ancestors. Another way of looking at the transmission, many, many angles on it, I think. One angle would be it's devotion to those ancestors that try to express something to help us. So sometimes we chant their names, sometimes we read their stories, sometimes we try to practice like they did as an expression of devotion. That's part of the lineage. Even though the lineage is not really them, it's not really those people, still we're devoted to the relationships that they created that we could call the lineage. We also sometimes talk about a horizontal transmission and a vertical transmission. Both of these parts are spoken of and also enacted, ritually enacted in Dharma transmission ceremonies. And vertical means like the succession through the centuries from the Buddha up to the present day, of teachers and students. It's hierarchical, it's vertical. The student is always pays homage to the teacher. They each have their Dharma position like that. And that's been that way since the Buddha's time. And then there's the horizontal transmission. It's like, in the realm of Buddha nature, everybody is completely identical. There's no teacher and student. There's no hierarchy. And that's a kind of, that's part of the transmission. So there's both parts. There's the horizontal aspect where teacher and student are exactly equal and they're celebrating awakening together. You can't even tell who's who. And then there's the hierarchical. And they play out back and forth. And I think both ritually in the ceremonies of transmission, but also I think in the life of teachers and students, it's like this, switching back and forth. This is my personal experience with my teacher. Because he's quite traditional, you could say the traditional is the kind of vertical emphasis. And the present, beyond time, is the horizontal. The vertical maintains the tradition and is more conservative. The horizontal is the fresh creativity that keeps from just becoming some mimic of the previous version. It has to be fresh. So the way these two work together has to be very dynamic. I think if we lose either side, the way is diminished. Sometimes, even within one conversation with my teacher, there's a very hierarchical sense. Talking to him as the teacher, maybe he's admonishing me in that role. And then there's like a meeting in the present where there's no difference at all. It's like we don't even know what's happening. And then it can immediately shift back into, and now please do this. Oh yes, thank you. I think it's the beauty of our practice. Maybe we almost could even say it's like the two truths, these two types of transmission or aspects. Transmission. Do you have any questions or comments? Anything to bring up or express? Yes, Richard.
What do you think it's like when two, let's say, quote, enlightened minds?
Well, if we say enlightened means they have great realization of delusion,
yes.
they could meet being like, do you know what's going on here, Richard? What's that about? I don't know. Is this what we're supposed to be doing? I'm really confused. I'm sorry. Can you help me?
Yes. I think when two enlightened minds meet, they soar together.
Well, that reminds me of the celebratory verse of this story. Did you read this beforehand? I think that's the way things work in this place we call home, the human realm. The verse says, the robe of faith is imparted at midnight to Huineng, the illiterate worker, stirring up the 700 monks at Huangmei, the fifth ancestors. The true Dharma eye of the branch of Linji, the blind ass destroying it gets the hatred of others. Mind to mind they seal each other. Ancestor to ancestor they transmit the lamp, leveling oceans and mountains, magically producing a giant phoenix. Just the name and word is hard to compare, or this itself cannot be named in any way. In sum, the method is knowing how to fly. Soar together through the vast open sky and through the filthy mud. Totally confused, utterly dejected, heartbroken. And then the sun rises on another day. On and on until it's time to die. So I don't think this transmission is like something that's reserved for particular people. It's happening all the time, and these meetings are unfolding each moment, actually. Yeah. And the more we're devoted to these meetings, the more the flight is unhindered. May this merit equally extend to every being and place, that all may realize Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.